This is the Kansas Blotter Audio Podcast, fiction, poetry, and interviews recorded in Lawrence, Kansas.
She's the author of Slowly, Slowly Horses, 2001 Audible Press, A Little Night Comes, 2005 Del Sol Press. Her poems have appeared in a number of journals, including Gettysburg Review, Iowa Review, Verse, Denver Quarterly, and Harvard Review. Her third book of poems, The Apothecary's Heir, H-E-I-R, won a National Poetry Series Award, which is an extraordinarily big deal, and will be published in 2012 by Penguin Books. This is like really something. This is like you go to a little one-room schoolhouse and suddenly you're a graduate student at Princeton. So, okay. And so that's the official stuff. The unofficial stuff is, I was trying to think, what can I say about Julie's poetry? Well, you're going to hear it in a minute, so you'll know what it's like. But dark chocolate, really wonderful, high-class dark chocolate, focused, rich, dense, creative dark chocolate. Think of, you know, what's his name over in Kansas City. Just really rich and dense and packed and imaginative, and like not much, if anything, that you've ever heard before. So it is a tremendous pleasure to introduce Julie Buxbaum.
So the first poem that I'm going to read, I'm addressing the summer season as if it were a person. I'm very ambivalent about the summer. I don't really like heat and bugs and humidity. I find it hard to think clearly and be productive. But in the end of the poem, it turns into a kind of love poem to oblivion. So, Summer of Fires. One. Season of third-degree burns and third-rate thoughts. Stasis is a place where stars go black. A football stadium filled with dead leaves. Stasis is a place of pale flowers behind parking lots. Season of rags, mustard gas, and Mausers. I'm putting you to sleep in my arms with some opium, you constellation of germs and viruses. As an animal dies in a vacant lot, and wind chafes the carapace of this tank town, it's muscle cars up on blocks in the yards. Two. Damp motherload of pathogens and mold to annotate with wounds and yet more wounds the body of a child. What power broker or precinct captain would not muscle you into a smoke-filled room to watch you gnash your teeth and murmur of corruption? Season of frogs and fecundity, bring on more, and always more, bee-harassed flowers. The mockingbird that died under the bush will continue to infect the night with incoherent bristles of its wings. Three. Season of fog and narrow boxes for stillborns. Paint those cherry trees with fungus till the whole sick harvest splashes down like a carpet bomb. Always budding silently behind the beehive's humid cells, ripe with apple cores and peach pits, marrow of hazelnuts and bones, musty death shifts the body rapidly between parentheses. Wind separates the vapors of poppy blooms. And in this drugged state, after a painful operation, I want to stay with you forever, undisturbed.
Laura?
Sure.
Yeah. And, oh, is that water
what's
for
up?
Us?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
What's up?
Well, maybe just a tad bit higher. Higher. Yeah. Thank you. That's perfect.
Sure. I'm even going to turn it up a little bit so that the people can hear you in the back.
Okay. So, yeah, I think that's a little bit better. Okay. All right. Thank you, Joe. All right, let's see it. This next poem takes place in a graveyard type of setting, purely imaginary. I'm drawn to the concept of the dead in this poem as kind of silently rebuking my tendency to be enslaved to my list of things to do, my constant harried pace of rushing around trying to get things done as though that could stave off my own mortality. So this is called A Death in the Snow. Epitaphs covered with mold, black markets of jimson weeds. From a shadow, this pine will bury back in the earth. I return to a stockyard of broken veins near the cornfields where a scarecrow shuffles its cuffs of straw. Deer bend their heads to a lie that dies near a woodpile. My dear one, my child. The dead lie in asocial scatterings in the rustling gothic adultery of dusk. A dog stirred from its daze by the rustle of creatures clearing a log bares its teeth at what is left of the earth piled up next to the small, dirty palace of a birdhouse. Cold as an antiquarian plow in the snow, I return to the woods and leave behind my list of things to do. Leave it lying in the snow like an ice pack for a wound, where the dead lie taciturn and hoodless and hived in the loaded soil. Okay. Oh, I was also going to say, most of these, I think all of these poems are going to be in the forthcoming book, the book that's coming out in June, except for actually this one is not going to be there. It's too new. It's a prose poem, and it's kind of a meditation on beauty, as in, I don't know, sort of a Keatsian truth is beauty, beauty is truth type of thing, but also equated with pain and suffering. Beauty equals truth equals suffering kind of thing in my mind. Anyway, there's a mention of a half Maenad early in the poem, which is a Maenad is a mythological worshiper, female worshiper of the god Dionysus. And the name translates as the Raving Ones. And they were said to have been inspired by the god into a state of ecstatic frenzy or frenzied ecstasy. Anyway, it doesn't have a title, so. Harmful, fatal wolf though you be, twisting and fixing me in the hard locks of some half-meaned, I will prey on these beads as though they were the material themselves of suffering authorized by mystery. The dead moth has returned home to its cotton encasing covered in shades. Lethe is an office woman, regulated to the point of death by her job. No, I do not have what it takes. Though I do not have what it takes, I will go all out for the fatal curve of ruin. I will arrive in the deadened contusion air and undergo the edicts of nightshade while the sadness of the family inside me dies. Wolf plague of torsions, associate of owls, lover of death mites and psyches sad, you are wide awake all night, high on agony. These mysteries of deadened air embed the heart in anguish. From your hiding place in a superabundance of pain, there is the sudden pink of morning. A morning of disturbed, rich dreams and other people's flowers on the tomb of something wrongly sovereign. And that pleasure that is close to hurting, the insides of joy taste like sadness forced to belong to someone else. It will be with relief that you bid your lovers goodbye. They are close to damage and the dimmed force of bandaged eyes. Screw you, beauty. You will suffer the fate of silence and die in some Slavic way station or sterile laboratory. So, all right. Okay. I really like dark chocolate, actually. So I'm glad you said that. But I really don't like really sweet chocolate. I like the bitter. So like bitter, dark. So you can kind of see that's where my sensibility goes. and I also was gonna say something about one of my favorite poets is Hart Crane, and I really like his concept of the logic of metaphor, and that sense in which language doesn't make sense rationally, but more like a piece of abstract music, where it speaks to you the way something you might hear in a dream, where the textures and hues and connotations of the words are much more important than the dictionary definitions, you know? So sometimes I think that, you know, poetry is a kind of private language, but of course it can't be entirely private, because it needs to give you kind of a balance between this content and the style. But anyway, Crane, always kind of rides that edge between falling over into complete sort of irrationality and intense abstract musicality has always impressed me. So this next poem is called Infant Dusk. So when people ask, you know, what are your poems about? And I saw some comment on your thing the other day that I really thought was very true. Yeah, it's like, it's hard to say what they're about, really. But anyway, so Infant Dusk. What I dream makes me sad and wed to secrecy. I walked into the woods with a disposable camera. A kind of calamity led me to an antechamber of ruinous dusk, a hermitage where I steel myself for dying. I have erred, infected slavery's secret heaven. I brood about some sickly moonbeam. Oops. I brood about some sickly moonbeam breaking upon a murderer's face. Behind the small wheels of a hurt smile, an altar boy freezes. He long ago passed through the pastoral. His words begin with bitterness. Soul-compelling thought, growing upon a grave, come hither, master the world inside me. I am an open phoneme, an infant dusk that daylight has bled out of. I don't really know what that means, but that's the way it came out. let's see. Okay, this next poem, I guess I can kind of say what this one's about. After I graduated, as I mentioned, I studied philosophy in college, so I had a BA in philosophy, and after that I didn't really know what to do for a living, so I worked as an office temp for a couple years in Milwaukee. I worked at a large bank and a couple of different large insurance companies in downtown Milwaukee. So this poem, I don't know, kind of reflects on some of those experiences. It's called The Workers. excuse me. The tedium of our desk sets is endless, and the crux of every living thing offends us. Clients come to make oblations in the cubicles, where oblivion is dictated in creepy syllables. We gesture opaquely, starry-eyed, whitening our cuffs with tiny toxic ministrations of bleach. Hollow bones in wrinkle-free pants. Having surrendered ourselves to calendars and chemical fumes meticulously all day long, we loosen death from the diagrams of paradise. Soon we will take possession of stale donuts, dried out azaleas, and ride home in black cars or enter barrooms in red scarves. Long after we've left the building to a plastic silence, the receptionist will feign indifference while vacuums unleash electrified whispers of disgust. Okay, how about one more? Is that okay? All right, so, okay. There's three sections to this poem. And not really, I don't have anything to really say to introduce it, but it's called Still Life with Rooms People Live In. One. Another squat, windowless morning murmurs on its industrial hook. Outside, the moon is a flatbed truck filled with the leftover ice of night, and alder trees keep going nowhere, dressed in droplets, globes of scum. Our daily menu begins crushing out bomb shelters, electric blankets. Waiting for your hands, morning spits me out over cratered staple factories, poisoned black clouds. Waiting for your hands. Two birds going nowhere, dressed in tin. They know so well how to sleep. Two. Lamp posts silhouetted in amber shafts slowly begin to rust. So very slowly, the nurse I love begins to withdraw her offer of foghorns, seafoam, mentholated pine. I don't care. Don't care how quickly the star-eaten machinery of these South Chicago steel mills disappears. The bridge between us is an X'd-out exhaust fume. Faintly, nursed by hard plastic, your sickbed genuflections reach me unripened. When you bend to read it, your daily menu darkens quietly as alder trees gather power in the rain. 3. Night, grotesque, organic, unfolds into the palm of a dropped puppet. It's Friday evening, and the future is again a faceless nurse who withdraws when I rise to take what she offers. Men curse the bad angles of broken machines, bleed droplets in arcs of carbon residue. I have no idea how to sleep, how boarded up bomb shelters gather power in the rain. We live in a room where, so very slowly, my finger to your lips, you suffer the distance between us. Thank you.
You have been listening to the Kansas Blotter audio podcast. More information about this podcast can be found at www.kansasblotter.blogspot.com.